welcome to episode 126 of the Manor Podcast. I'm your co-host, Michael Hamilton, and unfortunately not joined by anyone today. Roger is very busy for the holiday, spending a lot of time with family, and we didn't really have a way to line up times that we could both record, and that's just part of the thing with being busy, being family people, having a lot going on. So instead, today I decided to upload a little video telling you a story about the Alpha Clash Pro Tour. This is a story I've wanted to tell for a while. I wasn't sure if I could do it on the podcast or not. Roger wasn't, he didn't get to go to the Alpha Clash Pro Tour. He had other stuff going on. So basically it didn't feel like something he wanted to, or we didn't want to devote a whole episode to get together to it because he didn't feel great about not having a lot to contribute or talk about. But since Roger's not here this week, I kind of get to steal the show and do whatever I want. He of course, I already approved this with him and he said it was fine. So yeah, that's what I'm going to talk about today, the Alpha Clash Pro Tour. So first, I started prepping for the Alpha Clash Pro Tour shortly after Flesh and Blood Worlds, and Flesh and Blood Worlds went great for me. I got top 8 with the Count Your Blessings new deck. That's not what we're talking about on this episode, but that was a great tournament, and Osaka was really cool. I am looking forward to going back to Japan at some point in my life. But once I got back from Flesh and Blood Worlds, I hadn't really spent any time looking at the new Alpha Clash cards. I played a lot of set 3. I went to 2 Clash Grounds for set 3 constructed, and I felt very good about that set. I kind of explored some things. I had that blue-green Machina deck that I'll talk about more later in this episode that I had built last season and felt really good about it. But there were a lot of really, really powerful cards in set 4, and it really shook up the metagame quite a bit. So when I first got back, the first message in my little Alpha Clash Discord channel, I'm in a Discord with the Wolfpack, and there's about 5 people on the team that were planning to go to this event. So the 5 of us were the ones mainly talking there. And Zach Bunn writes in the channel, "Genesis seems broken." And I read Genesis's abilities and I'm like, yeah, he seems okay. He doesn't seem like game breaking. His first ability is you can play 1 card per turn from your resource zone. And when you do so, you need to resource another card from your hand. And this ability, I had learned that you could use it even if you didn't have cards in your hand, because you resolve the first part of the ability, and then putting a card from your hand into your resource zone isn't a cost. It's just like an effect that happens after you play a card from your resource zone. So I guess I should start a little bit slower. If you're not familiar with Alpha Clash, it plays a lot like Magic or Hearthstone or any game, Star Wars or the Disney Lorcana. It plays a lot like those games where you have resources that you spend to play your spells every turn, and then you have they're called clash cards in this game, but Magic calls them creatures. They're just like things that stay in play and do damage to your opponent. So any card that you draw, you can use as a resource. You can place it in your resource zone. You do get to do that at the start of each turn. You get to put 1 card from your hand into your resource zone. So one thing that would happen a lot is early in the game, you'd resource your powerful late game spells because, you know, it's turn 1. You don't really need the 6 cost or 7 cost card. And then later in the game, if you draw like smaller, lower cost and stuff, then you could kind of regret that you resourced your big stuff. But if you try to resource your smaller stuff and then you draw more big expensive top end stuff, then it can be pretty bad if you were resourcing cheaper cards instead because you really wanted to make sure that you kept your expensive stuff. So Genesis ability kind of lets you resource the big stuff, but know you'll have access to it later in the game, or also resource situational cards. Like our deck was, the deck that we ended up playing at the Pro Tour, which I'll get to in a little bit, is full of these conditional cards that are good in some spots, but in other spots they're not very good. And those are perfect to resource. You can resource them, and then if the game ends up playing in a way where you actually want access to this, you can just play it from your resource zone. And if not, then you'll just use it as a resource, just like any other card that you could resource, and it's perfect. So Zach says that Genesis seems broken. I don't really believe that when I read it. I think his ability is fine, but a lot of different contenders, they have access to like card advantage built into their contender abilities. So like, sure, they don't get to play whatever cards from their resource zone, but if you're drawing an extra card every turn or every other turn, like who cares? You're just going to have more cards in the Genesis deck. And at first, I went ahead and started testing with Genesis anyway. I wanted to do my due diligence. He did seem like the contender that seemed potentially the strongest from the new set, though. Kagan also ended up being very good, and we'll talk about him later because I actually played against the Kagan deck in the tournament. And when I was testing with it, it felt like his ability didn't seem that powerful, but there were a couple cards that stood out to me as really, really strong. The biggest one was Shocking Revelation, and Shocking Revelation is basically a board wipe. So what it does is, for however many creatures or clash cards you have, your opponent has to send their own clash cards to oblivion until they have the same amount of clash cards as you. So if you have no clash cards in play, it just kills all of your opponent's clash cards, which is great. That's something that only red has really had access to, a way to clear multiple clash cards with one card at once. And the red one is damage based, so even then it could struggle to clear like the biggest of clash cards. It did 5 damage to everything. So this card just doesn't matter how strong they are. As long as you have no clash cards in play, your opponent has sacrificed all their clash cards. So it also has a few other abilities, which is kind of crazy on a card that's already like getting rid of your opponent's board. It also lets you look at your opponent's hand, which is huge, getting that information. But the best part about it is you get to pick a card from their hand and they have to put it on the bottom of their deck. And that not only lets you kind of shape your game plan based on what your opponent has, but it also lets you take away maybe one of their best threats or their answer to one of your threats. And really, it's a really game warping card. And after playing with it, I knew I wanted to include that in my constructed deck. I knew that was a card I wanted to figure out a way to play. And so, yeah, that's where the search kind of started. The other issue I was having with the Genesis contender is I was running out of cards very quickly. Like, I was playing 2-mana Haven, which when you play her, you can put an extra card from your hand into your resource zone. And this card is a card that's been really powerful. It's a 4 of in my blue-green Machina deck that I made in Season 3. And it's just been kind of the best way to get ahead on resources. And it wasn't until I was looking at the card pool that I realized I had missed a very interesting card for this Genesis deck. A card called I Am Creation. And everyone who played in the tournament, I think basically every Genesis deck there had 4 copies of this card. It's just a card that I had kind of missed on my first draft of Genesis. And what it does is it costs 3 resources, which is 1 more than this Haven. And it says you can put the top card of your deck into your resource zone, engaged. Engaged just means tapped, you like it's already spent for the turn. And that seems fine. 3 mana to get an extra resource. That's a little bit too slow, because I would say that there's a lot of really strong 4 cost cards in the game, 4 cost clash cards that you really want to play on turn 3 if you can ramp. So ramping from 3 to 5 doesn't help as much as ramping from 2 to 4. But the thing I missed about this card, and the reason this card is actually quite good, is it costs 1 less resource to play if your contender is a Genesis contender. And I think secretly that's actually Genesis's I don't think his abilities are actually that good, but getting access to this card that lets you ramp consistently on turn 2 and go from 2 to 4 is why Genesis ended up being as strong as he is. For context, other decks in the past have splashed blue just to get access to this 2-mana Haven, and this is a card that's just better than the 2-mana Haven because it's not costing an additional card from your hand to ramp. So once I found that card, I felt pretty confident that Zach was right all along. Genesis is quite good. And I played some test games with Merrick Kemp, who is a great friend of mine and is also one of the Wolfpack members going to this event. He was working on some Kagan decks, and he was just beating me up, honestly. Kagan is quite good against slow controlling Genesis decks. You basically, as the Genesis player, you give them enough time to make their full suit of armor. Kagan's, I guess I should explain what Kagan does. So Kagan's another new contender from set 4, and he has an exclusive piece of equipment called the Dragon Helm. And the Dragon Helm says when it's equipped to your a Kagan contender, if you're also equipped with, or actually, let me read it real quick. I'm going to take a quick look. Yeah. Once per turn, during your primary phase, if this card has Dragon Helm, Fire Mace, Flame Shield, and Dragon Scale Armor attached, you may exhaust this card. If you do, create a 10-10, which is huge, by the way. You start with 30 health with most contenders. Some start with 25, some start with 20, but most start with 30. 10-10 is still huge, bigger than I think any other card in the game. I don't think there's anything as big as a 10-10. You create a 10-10 dragon that has breakthrough, which means if it deals damage to a clash card, then any extra damage dealt will go to their contender instead. So it's basically trample for Magic. It also has flight. So flight means you can't obstruct it unless your card has a special way to obstruct it. So the main thing is he gets a 10-10 every turn, actually, if he wants it, which is another thing. So it's exclusive, the 10-10. So if you kill the first 10-10, he can just make another one. If you don't kill it, he can't make another one. So that helps, but doesn't solve the issue of the first 10-10 that's going to kill you. And if you answer it, he'll make another one. So the best way to beat Kagan is just kill him before he makes his dragons, because the dragons kill you so quickly. And the blue-white Genesis deck, which is what I ultimately ended up on, was not very good at doing that. It's very, very slow. I played some different colors of Genesis as well. I tried blue-red, I tried blue-green, I tried blue-black. I tried some special combinations of three and four colors. Like, I tried a lot of blue-black-white and blue-black-green. And ultimately ended up on blue-white, but was struggling a lot with this Kagan deck that Merrick was working on. I also did a lot of testing into Ian. We played against a few different aggressive decks. We played, of course, against the blue-green Machina deck that I had built for the previous tournament that I won in Columbus, and that Chris Brummett actually brought the same blue-green Machina deck and won the next Clash Ground in Tampa, which, yeah, I'll talk about Chris later. I actually played him in this tournament too. So the Genesis deck was doing quite well into blue-green Machina. It was doing pretty well into the various Kilimanjaro aggressive decks that Ian was brewing up. And with some tweaks and tuning, it felt quite good. And I never really resolved the card running out of card issues, but I had found some things that helped. Each deck's allowed to play up to four clash buffs. And there's one clash buff that only blue contenders get to play called Augmented Reality. And it can give all of your clash cards plus two health or defense until end of turn and draw two cards. And spending one resource and a card to draw two cards, that's a great deal. And it really helped a lot with the card draw issue. The other thing we found was there's a 7-mana clash card called Mean Streak. Oh gosh, I don't remember his name. Mean Streak Finishing Blow, I think. And whenever he attacks, you can make an opponent discard or you can draw a card. And at first, we put this card in our deck to solve the card issue where you're running out of cards, you just need more card draw. This Mean Streak helps a lot with that. But actually, after playing with him, I found more often we were choosing to make our opponent discard, because first we'd cast Shocking Revelation and we'd clear their board and make them put their best card on the bottom of their deck. And then the next turn, if we followed it up with a Mean Streak Finishing Blow and made them discard another card, their hand size very quickly got down to pretty close to zero. So, originally, I thought Mean Streak was there to help with the card draw issue. He ended up being more about just locking your opponent out of options. So that's basically the deck we ended up with, was a blue-white Genesis deck revolving around those cards, card draw, playing the I Am Creation to ramp up to cast our Shocking Revelation sooner. It had a few different clash cards that I won't get too into now. There's another 4-mana Genesis that's quite good that ramps when it dies. There's Lin. 1-mana Lin has been an all-star in past formats. It's a 1-mana 2-2, which is great. And then it also gets to put a bounty counter on something, and if you kill that thing, you get to get a thing back, which it's just a very strong card. And it didn't fit into the deck perfectly, but for power level reasons, we just thought it was good enough. White also gave access to some really powerful tools. I haven't talked about why we're white yet. The most obvious one is Deliverance, which is just pay three. It's white, white, and one. Takes two white resources and costs three total. And you just send any clash card to Oblivion. And for a control deck, that's a perfect way to answer things. Just spending three resources to get rid of it. It also had access to what I think is the best trap in Alpha Clash right now, Sacred Banishment. It's a trap, which the way traps work in Alpha Clash is you just set them face down in your trap zone. And then when your opponent meets a certain condition, you can pay a cost to activate your trap. And Sacred Banishment counters a play effect. So when your opponent plays a card, you can play Sacred Banishment. And it says, send target clash card being played to the top of its owner's deck. So your opponent plays your clash card, you spend 3 mana on this trap, and you send it back to the top of your deck. So One thing I didn't say about Aquaclash is everything is allowed to attack the turn it comes down. So as a control deck, that's really scary. Your opponent, like maybe you play Shocking Revelation, you clean up your opponent's whole board, you have nothing, they have nothing, that's great. They go to their turn, they play something big and hit you with it, and you take a bunch of damage, and you're like, dang it, I thought I cleared up the board. And if they do that, and then let's say you play Deliverance on their thing, and then they play another thing and hit you again, you play Deliverance, eventually you're going to run out of life trying to do that over and over again. So having access to Sacred Banishment kind of can buy you time where maybe the first turn you play Shocking Revelation, they play a big thing and hit you with it. And then on your next turn, you play Deliverance on their big thing. And then you set your trap. You got three resources up. If they try to play something and hit you with it, then you just Sacred Banishment to stop their deck. And that play pattern comes up a lot. And Sacred Banishment was a great card in the deck for that reason. The other white cards that are really good is there's a one mana Haven. You pay one and it's a 1/2. And when it enters, it draws you a card. That's just such a good rate. A 1/2 blocks really well for you. And even if it just dies chump blocking, you spent one resource on it and you got to draw a card out of the deal. So that card was really, really good. And honestly, a big part of why we ended up playing blue-white. We dubbed it the wall. It kind of earned that nickname in testing because it was just holding so much back, especially in combination with Grant Park Chicago. And Grant Park says all rogues and all alphas get +2 defense. And this one mana Haven is an alpha or is a rogue. So she goes to from being a 1/2 to a 1/4, which suddenly just is really, really hard to punch through. A lot of clash cards have 2 or 3 power, and having 4 defense, it's just really hard to get through that. And the other clash ground that we found in white that was really good was another suggestion from Merrick. It was Victory Peak. And Victory Peak says it's a clash ground, but it mainly focuses as like a trap the way it's used, because it has counter attack and you can engage it and prevent the next 3 damage that would be dealt to whatever you target. So if they attack your contender with their 4/4 or whatever, and you have Victory Peak in play, then you can engage Victory Peak to prevent 3 of that damage from your contender. Your contender starts with 30 health. If you're being attacked for, you're going to take 1 damage instead of 4. That's a huge difference and adds up to quite a lot of life throughout the course of a game. And yeah, it just ended up being very good at keeping our Genesis alive. So that's basically where the deck ended up. There's a few other cards that I'm not going to talk about right now. There was a 4-mana Clarity. I keep saying I'm not going to talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it. There's a 4-mana Clarity that says if you're 5 health or lower when it enters, you can look at the top 2 cards of your deck, put them on top or bottom, and then draw a card. And it also gets +2 defense until end of turn. And I'll talk more about her later. But that's not exactly how she ends up working. But that's how I thought she worked. She seemed great against the aggro decks. It's a 4-mana 4/4, which is also a pretty good sized body. And it's also a rogue as well. So it gets that +2 defense when you have Grant Park in play and becomes a 4/6. So anyway, that's the deck we end up on. We're all talking about our list. We think we might have trouble getting 5 full copies of the deck together. And Merrick kindly offers to just play the Kagan deck he's been working on. He's really been enjoying the Kagan. And Zach and Matt haven't really had a lot of time to test before the event. And they're like, well, we'll see what we're playing. Zach was looking at playing. I don't actually want to say what they were looking at playing in case they end up wanting to play them at future events. But they weren't looking at the Genesis deck that much. So time to travel comes. I guess I said I was testing daily with Ian. Ian's basically locked on playing Genesis as well at this point. So time to travel. It's Thursday night and we're all flying in Thursday night. I was looking at flights to Charlotte because I knew I wanted to go to this tournament. As soon as they announced it, I looked at flights to Charlotte and it was like $300 for a one-way direct flight. And that was so much money. And Merrick, who I talked about before, was like, hey, just fly to Charlottesville, see how much that costs. I can just drive you down if it's cheaper to go there. And I look and the flights to Charlottesville are like $100 and it's not a direct flight, but that's fine. I'll save $200 and take an indirect flight. And I go to book the flight and I look and it's like layover in Charlotte. And I was like, huh? It was $300 to go to Charlotte. And so I go in back and check the flights directly to Charlotte. And it's the same first step of that flight to Charlottesville, but it's $300 instead of $100. So I was thinking about it. I'm like, can I actually just book the flight to Charlottesville and get off at Charlotte? And eventually I decide that's what I want to do. And I don't need to get a round trip ticket because I actually have plans in North Carolina after the tournament. So I go ahead and book this flight to Charlottesville, planning to just stop at Charlotte and not take the second half of my flight and hope that's okay. I have no checked bags, so should be fine. I usually travel pretty light with a backpack and a roller bag if if I am allowed a roller bag, but I've honestly flown to so many tournaments with just my backpack. So anyway, Thursday night, I fly in and we meet up with, or I meet up with everybody there. Everyone actually lands within an hour of each other. Zach and Ian fly in together. And then Matt, I think, lands actually between Zach and Ian and me. And it's all within, I think it might actually have been within 30 minutes, but we all get there. Merrick's driving down from Charlottesville. He picks us all up. It's great to see everybody. I look at my phone because I'm trying to figure out what to do about my flight to Charlottesville that I'm supposed to get on. And the flight to Charlottesville actually got delayed an hour or two. And it's like, you can cancel for free. And I'm like, great, cancel. So no repercussions there. I canceled because it was late, not because that was my original plan. Of course. And we all cram into Merrick's car and there's a lot of energy, but it's a small little car. There's five of us crammed in there and we're not like super uncomfortable, but it's definitely a little packed. But I think that everyone just being so excited to see everyone and having a good time made it feel like it wasn't taking up as much space as it really was. So we go back to the hotel. We're actually staying in a separate, me and Merrick are staying in a separate hotel just down the street because it was a lot cheaper. And I was very happy to save the money. So we stay in a hotel. It's a lot cheaper. We drop off Matt, Zach, and Ian. They get checked in. We go get checked in our hotel. And we end up going back over to their hotel and talking for a few hours before coming back and going to sleep. So wake up Friday morning. And the tournament's just Saturday and Sunday. So we wake up Friday and just have the whole day basically to finalize our deck list, figure out what deck Matt and Zach are playing because they aren't sure that they're playing the Blue Eye Genesis deck yet. Me and Ian are pretty sure. And we have basically four copies of everything we need, I think. Except I think we were actually missing Shocking Revelations, but we scramble around and find those, or can find those on Friday. So we go see the venue. We say hi to Ridge, who's the owner or CEO and owner of Rising Empire Studios, and he's there. He's greeting everyone. And there's a lot of the Alpha Clash staff there that we say hi to. And they're running events all day Friday. There's a lot of side events, but we kind of are planning to go do our own testing. We don't want to reveal too much about the blue-white deck that we've been working on. But we say hi. We pick up some Shocking Revelations from the vendor. And I think Zach gets some from someone else. But anyway, we find all the Shocking Revelations we need to build four Genesis decks. And we end up going to Charlotte Beer Gardens, which is a really nice place. We actually went there 2 years ago, last time we were in Charlotte for a tournament together, which happened to be the U.S. Nationals that I won with Icelander. So great memories of that place. And we go there. We basically get a table. They're not too packed because it's just like 11 a.m. or whatever on a Saturday. Nothing's going on. Or a Friday. Nothing's going on. So we get a table. And we basically sit there jamming games of Alpha Clash for the next 6 hours or so. We order some appetizers and some drinks. Have a good time. Everyone's hanging out. Having a good time. And eventually we... with enough testing, everyone ends up wanting to play the Blue Eye Genesis deck. It just seems really powerful, and it's just winning a lot in testing and doing powerful things. So that's basically what happened Friday. After that, we went back to the venue because they were doing free pizza. So they were doing free pizza and an announcement kind of thing, a presentation where Ridge got up in front of everybody with a little PowerPoint presentation and kind of talked about the past of Alpha Clash, the present, and what is upcoming. And the next sets, they were talking about basically integrating a lot of the heroes from the board game they're working on and making those the contenders in the next sets, which is pretty cool. And I was worried there might not be enough characters in the universe to keep like cranking out four or five contenders every set, but now I know they're just like set for the next year and a half because they have a bunch of contenders from the board game. They're doing like a time jump thing where they're going back and playing from a different time zone, like an or time era. Cause I think the board game's set way in the past, I think. Don't quote me on that. Anyway. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Everyone's really excited. Ridge gets pretty emotional giving this presentation. I think he's just, really happy that there's so many people there to celebrate the game that he's worked really hard on. So yeah, the presentation's great. They announced a couple new contenders from the next set. One is this Flip Black White Clarity contender, and the other one I believe is Alpha Astor, which is a new blue contender in the next set. And he looks quite good. So yeah. That night, I am pretty tired after the other presentations. I stayed up pretty late Thursday night chatting with everybody and just being excited. And I'm like, I really need to make sure I get some good sleep before the tournament tomorrow. So I try to go to bed pretty early, and they're texting about updates to the Genesis deck, 'cause they're jamming some Genesis mirrors. One thing we picked up on Friday was a lot of the other good players, some of the Flesh and Blood players, were also playing Genesis in the side events, and were kind of worried about making sure we're prepared for the mirror. So they're jamming some mirrors, and they're talking about some changes. And I'm like, I'm going to go to bed. I'll talk in the morning. And instead of going to bed, I message a bunch back, and I'm like, okay, we can play the fourth copy of the Big Mean Streak, because we just really want the top end finisher in the mirror. Ended up removing the we had a two mana Haven in the deck that wasn't actually that good or worth a spot, so she got cut. It was basically the one mana Haven, the same ability. It's a 1/2 that draws you a card when it enters, but it costs 2 instead of 1. And it also has this other mode where instead of choosing to draw a card, you can choose to gain 2 life. But honestly, most of the time it ended up just being a 2 mana version of the 1 mana Haven, which the 1 mana Haven's great, but doubling its cost makes it feel a lot worse. So it made sense to cut her from the deck, and the 2 life coming, gaining 2 life did come up sometimes, but not often enough that it really, I don't think it warranted a slot. So, and Zach kind of pushed for that too, and I'm like, yeah, I think that makes sense. So the morning of, we go down to the hall. I'm writing out my deck list. We all meet up down at the tournament hall and fill out our deck list and basically submit it. There was one card that we were a little bit worried about finding that I hadn't even thought of as a card that we should play in our deck, but it was Mean Streak Intercepting. It's a 3-mana 3/3 that you can pay 2 blue resources to draw a card once per turn. And basically, the card I talked about before, Grant Park, when you play it, the Clash Guard Grant Park, when you play it, you can search your deck for a Clash card that costs 5 or less. So our big Mean Streak that draws cards costs 7, so we couldn't search for that. So I really wanted to add a way to basically find a source of card advantage with Grant Park. So adding that 3-mana Mean Streak kind of filled that role. So we had to scramble to find those. I think we ended up opening a bunch of packs to find. We ended up playing 8 copies of them, so we could play one in the main deck and then one in the sideboard as well. So we ended up finding them all after opening a couple boxes the night before. But yeah, we found them. We all registered our deck, and it was time for the tournament to start. And at the start of the tournament, there's some announcements thanking everyone for being there and going into some of the rules things. And the rules things are all stuff we've heard before until we get to the tiebreaker rules. And Alpha Clash has had a weird history with ties. In the first tournament in Vegas, they had a Clash Ground that basically had Magic's tiebreaker rules, where if it was 1-1 and the game ended, then it would be a draw. You could also do intentional draws if they were the best for your standings for seedings. And it led to several people just choosing to draw in the last round of Swiss, thinking they would get put into the top 8. One of them, of course, was Zach Bunn, who unfortunately drew and then got 9th place after all the results came in. And I think that after that event, they were like, we don't like draws in Alpha Clash. We don't want that to happen anymore. So they changed the rules to not allow draws anymore. You couldn't draw a game, and if a game ran out of time, there would be tiebreaker rules, which would be whoever was missing the most life, and then after that was who had the most Clash cards in play. And then there were more tiebreakers after that. I'm not sure if any games have come up to needing an additional tiebreaker after who has more Clash cards in play, but that was the tiebreaker rules. So the thing that was how we played in Columbus and in Tampa, and those rules seem fine. But one thing that we didn't play with in Columbus and Tampa that has apparently been in the rules for quite a while, but I believe was just the tournaments weren't being run exactly in line with the rules, was if you finished a game, then you had to do tiebreaker rules to see who won the game. Or if you didn't finish a game when time was out, you had to do tiebreaker rules to see who won that game in a tiebreaker situation. So if let's say hypothetically, if playing our slow blue white Genesis deck, we let's say I'm playing against someone and I win game one, and then in game two we run out of time, you get to play five additional turns when you run out of time, so you have a chance to end the game or play towards these tiebreaker rules. But if you end the game, or if you don't end the game in those five additional turns, then you do the tiebreaker to see who would win that game. So let's say I've taken 20 damage, my opponent's only taken 5 damage because I'm a slower deck, and then that game two will be determined that my opponent would have won that game. And then once you do that, you do... Now the set is a draw. So games aren't allowed to be draws, and sets aren't allowed to be draws. So at this point, now you still have a tie. So the rules are that you have to play a quick, basically sudden death tiebreaker rule game where you each get to play three turns, and whoever is behind by the tiebreaker rules after that game will lose that game and in turn lose the whole set. So this ended up being a little bit awkward because these game three tiebreaker games happened a lot, because a lot of the time the person that won game one would be behind in game two when time was called, and you'd have to do a tiebreaker for game three. And I think that isn't ideal. I don't think that these time rules were supposed to make so many of these game three weird tiebreaker games happen. And I would say over the weekend, there were probably at least 10 of these tiebreaker game three games that happened where we only got five turns in game three, or three turns per player in game three, because game two wouldn't reach a real ending. And then because a game and a set both cannot be a draw, then the game would be determined. The game two would have a winner, and then we'd have to play a tiebreaker in game three. I think what they could do is make it so sets cannot have draws, but games do. And that would fix it. So if someone won game one and then game two, you ran out of time, then the person that won game one could just win the set, and it wouldn't make these tiebreakers matter less, because as it is, decks that were built to be able to play quite well in these tiebreaker rules had a lot of equity over other decks. And it led to some weird things happening in the tournament. But anyway, that's not really now. And that's not really something that I don't think what I just proposed is a perfect solution. I don't think there is a perfect solution. And just like anytime you're playing a card game with a limited amount of time, which is every Swiss round of every card game that I know of, it's hard for it to be perfectly fair or balanced. And I think the best solution that I have found is when I play on like a digital card game where you have your own chess clock, where when it runs out, you just lose. But that's something that you can't really implement in a physical card game. So that's just how it is, I guess. So anyway, when we find out about those rules, a lot of people aren't super happy, including me. I want to change my sideboard to just like have cards that are better in these tiebreaker games. I want a fourth copy of the one mana Lin, the one mana 2/2 that we're playing, because if the tiebreakers are going to be that impactful, I just want all the cards that I can play that are good in this tiebreaker situation. I want back that 2-mana 1/2 Haven that you can, when it enters, you can either gain 2 life or draw a card, because the gain 2 life mode on it's looking a lot better when, if I'm ahead at the end of 3 turns, I win, than having a 1/2 that gains 2 life. That's huge. So I talked to the judge and a few other people talking to the judge, and it's like, hey, is this really how it works? And he's like, yes, this is how the tiebreaker rules work. This is how it's been supposed to work. I don't know how the last tournaments have been run, but this is what the rules say, and I'm going to do that. So we're like, okay, that makes sense. And then I'm like, I understand that this is how the tournament's going to be run. Can I change my deck? Because I didn't know that. And he thinks for a little bit, and he's like, if I let you change your deck, I have to let everyone change the deck. So no. And I'm like, okay, great. So with that, the tournament starts. And I'm going to go through each of my rounds kind of shorter. This has been going on a little longer than I expected. I guess I am in full control over that. I'm making the video, I'm doing the recording, but I didn't know how long it would take to talk through my whole tournament. So, or the whole tournament weekend. So I'll get into it. So round one, I play against someone playing Machina. I'm very familiar with Machina, of course. I built the blue-green deck that I won Columbus with, and then Chris Brummett also won Tampa with it. So Machina, hopefully it's a blue-green one. I've tested a decent amount into it. I know that it's a good matchup for me. And I sit down, and I'm still a little flustered about the time thing, and I kind of bring it up to my opponent. I'm like, hey, can we try to play pretty fast? I'm worried about time. I'm playing one of the about as slow of a deck as possible because I'm playing this blue-white deck that doesn't really have very many ways to win the game. He's like, yeah, I understand, man. We'll play fast. And we have a good game. He's playing blue-green Machina. I'm very, like I said, very familiar with it. I think he played the games pretty well. I didn't see anything that I would suggest he do differently that I can remember. I guess it doesn't really, it's not what I should be focused on, but we play the games and I kind of beat him up pretty badly. I cast Shocking Revelation on turn 4 or 5, both games, and just clean up his board, clean up his hand, and just kill him. And our games end with like 20 minutes left on the clock. I win 2-0, and then that's it. I thank him for the games, and I also made sure to kind of check in about how I presented the time thing at the start and make sure that I was not coming across too badly. And I think that I did not do the best job at saying it or asking my opponent about us playing faster. And I kind of took a note to be more respectful of my opponents. And they're all there to have fun. We're all here to have fun. And even though the time rules aren't what I was hoping for, it's always just important to make sure that everyone's having a good time. And that's ultimately why you're all there. Okay. So I finished the round with quite a bit of time left. I look over, I see Zach still in a game one playing against this white-black Shadowlight deck, which I'm not going to talk about, but it's a really grindy, slow deck. And ultimately, he doesn't actually get to finish the game and loses the game one due to the tiebreaker rules. And because it's game one, then the set was up 1-0, and he ends up losing the whole match from that one game, losing that one game in tiebreakers. Anyway, round two, I play against Pete Budenczyk. Pete is also a Clash Ground champion. He won the Clash Ground in Las Vegas, the first one they did. He actually beat me in the finals in a 60-card mirror match where I was playing. I had worked on this red-black Torque list and with the Wolfpack guys, and basically we shared it with them about a week before the tournament to try to get some extra info on the deck, make it a little bit better, just like finally tune that things. And he beat me in the finals of that tournament. And since then, I've been a little closer to the chest about what decks I'm working on. So I play against him. He's on a blue-green Genesis deck. And green has some really, really powerful top ends. So his game plan is he wants to ramp on turn two. He wants to ramp again on turn three. And then on turn four, he wants to play one of the big six-drop powerful green finishers. It has four copies of Kagan the Dragon, which is a 6-mana 5/5 that with flight, and when it enters, it sends anything to Oblivion. So like Deliverance, but you also get a 5/5 flyer attached to it. And then the other thing he has is four copies of Magnate Lone Fighter, which is a 6-mana 4/4 with flight. And if you have no other Clash cards other than that Magnate in play, it gets +4/+4. So it's a 6-mana 8/8 flight, which is just, it kills you so fast. It's so big. And play against him. Things line up pretty well for me, and I ended up just 2-0-ing him that game. I think I don't remember the specifics of his draw, but I remember that there were a couple things that went pretty badly for him. I had an accessory in play for a while, and he basically flipped over the top three cards of his deck and put them into his resource zone with I Am Creation, and they were three ways to blow up artifacts, or two of them were ways to blow up artifacts or something. My accessory in play stopped him from using his contender ability, so he couldn't use them from his resource zone to kill it. It was in my opinion, it was pretty humorous, but it probably didn't feel that funny to him. It was like, dang, that sucks. Round three, I played against this really cool blue-red-green Genesis deck. It was playing a 4-mana accessory that said double your trigger enter effects. So basically what it was trying to do was play these cards that had powerful enter abilities, and it would double them from that accessory. And with the I Am Creation, it could ramp from 2-mana to 4-mana, so it could play that accessory on turn three and really start getting the gears turning, you know? So, I had a good game against him. His deck was very cool, and ultimately I was able to take it down, but the games were pretty close. After that, I checked in with Zach, who was, I believe he was 0-2 or 1-2 at that point, and he looked very frustrated. So I felt pretty bad. I think he had another time issue where he ran out of time, and I think he was a little bit regretting playing the control deck, especially with these time rules. Matt and Ian were both doing pretty good. I think they were both either 2-1 or 3-0 at this point. Merrick was having a rougher tournament, but I think that he learned a lot about his green black Kagan deck and would probably make some pretty big changes to it if he played it again. Round 4, I play against a blue-white Mean Streak deck. Mean Streak is a really cool contender. He has 25 health, and he's blue. And his ability is whenever a clash card you control attacks, if it doesn't have a streak counter on it, put a streak counter on it. And streak counters don't do anything by themselves, but he also has an ability where you can engage him and remove 2 streak counters total from clash cards you control and draw a card. So basically what Mean Streak wants to do is play cheap clash cards and attack you with them and then draw cards with the counters on them. And that's what my opponent's doing. He's playing the 1-mana Whitehaven I'm playing. He's playing the 1-mana Lin I'm playing. A bunch of just cheap, strong clash cards. And the thing that stood out to me in this game is he plays the 4-mana Clarity, the 4-mana 4-4 when it enters. If you're 5 or low life, then 5 life or more behind your opponent, you get to, it gets to gain 2 health or 2 defense, and it opts to, and then you draw a card. So he played this, but he wasn't 5 or more life lower than me. And he says, so I won't get the +2 defense, but I'll still do the other ability. And I'm like, what? That's not how that card works. And I call a judge over to clear it up to my opponent. That's clearly not how the card works. And the judge comes over and he reads the card and he says, yes. So there's a period here where it says if you're 5 or less life lower, you gain 2 defense, and then period. And then you look at the top 2 cards, put one on the bottom and draw, or put any number of them on the bottom or back on top and then draw a card. That's a separate ability that happens no matter what. And I'm playing 3 copies of this Clarity in my deck. I've been testing with this Clarity all leading up into the event, and I have never played it like that. And I thought this card was still good enough to include 3 copies in my deck. And now that the judge, and I think I might appeal it to the head judge. I don't remember, or the head judge gave the original ruling. I don't remember, but confirmed with the head judge, that is how it works. And so the rest of the tournament, I'm like, oh, my deck got a giant buff that I didn't know about. And this Clarity is just insane. I would be playing 4 copies of it main deck if I knew that's how it worked, instead of 3, which isn't a huge difference, but it is a difference. Anyway, I have a very close game with him. The first game, I take it down. The second game, I play a board wipe, or I don't play a board wipe. I'm on my turn 3, I can choose between ramping more or kind of playing some defensive stuff. And I choose to ramp more. And he slams down a 6 drop that gives all of his clash cards +2/+0 until end of turn, and basically attacks me from like 28 down to like 9 in one turn, and ends up winning that second game. That's the first game I ended up dropping this tournament. And we play a third game, and I managed to get there in the third game, but I was like, wow, that deck was really cool. It was powerful. And Mean Streak's looking really good with the 1-mana clash buff that draws 2 cards on top of his hero or his contender ability. He basically never seemed to run out of cards. He just kept playing more cards and kept petting me with him. So it was a scary matchup, but I ended up getting there. Then after that game, I'm running around trying to tell my teammates, I'm like, hey, guys, Clarity, look, she has this, she always does a thing. She opts 2 and then draws a card, regardless of whether you're lower than them or not. So play your Clarities more. Play it. It's very good. And everyone's like, what? Are you sure that's how it works? I'm like, yep, I talked to the head judge. Yep. And then so the rest of the tournament, we all knew that was how it worked. We didn't know, none of us knew until that point though. So it was surprising. Round 5, I played against Lee Pouchard, I think is how you say his name. Lee, he runs the Tavern Brawlers, which is a little online league where you can play Alpha Clash matches over a month, or they also have Flesh and Blood. They do quite a few different games, and they're all digital. You play them online. I think for the Flesh and Blood ones, you play on webcam. For Alpha Clash, we just were playing on Tabletop Simulator. But the league's really cool, and I actually played in one to prepare for Vegas for the first time, and that was it helped me tune and refine the red-black Torque deck that I took to Vegas. And he was playing this green-red Pestilence deck, and Pestilence is a contender that starts with 20 health, but it has 1 defense. So every time it would take damage, you reduce that damage by 1. So it looks like it has less health, but it actually sometimes has more depending on the matchup. And Its main ability is whenever a clash card your opponent controls is defeated by, maybe by your card effects. I don't remember exactly the text, but when, it's defeated by outside of combat. So not during the clash phase. When it's defeated during your primary phase, you get to draw a card. So his deck has a bunch of removal and a bunch of clash cards that remove other clash cards when they enter, because that lets him draw cards and that's kind of his value engine. So I'm playing my control deck and I'm looking at it and I realize I have a one mana Haven in my starting hand. And I realize that if I just play this out, he's just going to use a card to kill it and draw a new card. Instead, if I just wait until I can like strip his hand and stop him from killing me and don't play things into his removal, that it'll be hard for him to mount enough pressure to actually finish me off. So I end up playing a really weird slow game where I'm not playing anything to the board for the first few turns. And then eventually I just play the seven mana mean streak and start making him discard cards and it's harder for him to kill. And that works really well in the first game. So the second game I do it again and it works really well in the second game. So I end up beating him 2-0. It was a really good learning experience for me because I basically hadn't tested against Pestilence. I wanted to try the strategy out and it worked quite well. So yeah, and it was a cool deck from Lee. He's been working on Green Red Pestilence for a while. I think he top forward the Tampa tournament with it as well. So cool deck. I think it might have a pretty rough matchup into these Clash Card Light control decks, where I guess my deck did have a decent amount of Clash Cards, but it could also play the full game without playing one for a while. And that made it tough for him to really get his value engines online. Okay. Two more rounds of Swiss. So at this point, I think at 5-0, I should be locked for top 8, but I want to play for seeding still. So the next round, I play against Jacob Snodgrass. And Jacob's another player that I have a history with. I played him in the top 4 of the Vegas Clash Ground, where he was playing this really cool blue-black-green Clarity deck. And Clarity is a white contender. It was a really cool control deck that he was playing then, where he was playing basically a green-black deck that was splashing blue for the Ramp Haven that I talked about before. And his deck was real cool there. And the next time I played him, he was playing in Columbus. He had this red-white control deck that was playing Warcry, which was a contender I didn't even realize existed before that tournament. And he had a really cool deck of that. And basically, I have learned Jacob's always going to have these cool control decks. So I was really excited to see his green white Kagan deck that I knew he was playing. I knew he was playing because I saw him around. But yeah, we play, our first game goes kind of long and I beat him, but it was a pretty long game. In our second game, the game's going long again and we run out of time in our second game. And that's not great because the tiebreaker rules are not something that either of us like. And we play the 5 turns out in the second game. And I make a pretty big mistake. I cast a Shocking Revelation when his only clash card in play is not allowed to be sent to Oblivion, so it doesn't do anything. And he wins the tiebreaker rules based on that play. He might have won him anyway, but that was especially bad. It put me really far behind. So we have to play a sudden death game 3 overtime, whatever you want to call it. And I sideboard in my third copy of One Mana Lin, and I get to choose to go second, which I think is slightly better in this current tiebreaker showdown sudden death rules, because you both get 3 turns. So going second means you get an attack on the first turn that you take, whereas the person going first isn't allowed to attack on the first turn of the game. So I think going second is slightly advantage in this. I choose to go second. His first turn, he plays like a one mana 1/1 that doesn't do anything really. And then I play my Lin and I hit him. And then his next turn, he spends 2 resources to just play down a shield, which the shield doesn't do anything until you equip it to your contender. And it's just not a very good use of his turn 2 in a sudden death game. In a real game, it would be fine. You're just playing this thing, and Kagan's ability lets you draw a card whenever you play equipment. But sudden death, not great. I play another clash card or 2 more clash cards or something, and I just hit him, and he's just taking a bunch of damage. And then his third turn, he just looks at his hand and just... I don't remember if he concedes or just passes or what. And then I hit him again and I'm up quite a chunk of life at that point, which ultimately wouldn't decide the game in a regular game, but because it's the sudden death rules, I win that round. And it's on stream, which I think stream chat kind of got to see what, or the people watching the stream kind of got to see what the tiebreakers felt like and how they were not ideal, but I think ultimately if the tiebreaker system was that whoever won the first game, if the second game didn't finish, then I would have won the set that way as well. It just sucks that we ran out of time in what was a really cool match. And Jacob's also 5-0 at this point, so we're pretty sure he's locked for top 8 as well. So ultimately it was basically just for seeding that we were playing for. But yeah, sucks to have a match decided like that. And yeah, so I'm going into the last round. I am 6-0. I'm locked for top 8, and I think I might be locked for first seed because I believe Jacob was the last person that was undefeated other than me. So I think if I lose this last round, if it's flesh and blood tiebreakers, I'm for sure locked for top 8. But because the tiebreakers in this game don't work that way, it's not just when you lost, it's just strength of schedule, basically how strong you're or how well your opponents did in the tournament. I'm not for sure locked for top 8. And my teammate, Matt Coles, is 5-1 as well. So if he wins his last round, he's in. If he loses, it'll matter for tiebreakers, or it'll matter what his tiebreakers are. So me beating someone else who is 6-1 at this point means Matt's more likely to make it in if he wins or if he loses his last round. So round 7, I'm paired against Mo Boggsley, who's another player I have a history with. He helped me work on the red-black torque deck for Vegas a little bit. We played probably like 3 or 4 hours of games where he was just trying different things against it and just dying. And ultimately he was like, okay, yeah, I should just be playing this red-black torque deck. It's really good. And we played at the Vegas sealed Clash Ground. And we actually met in the finals of that where he was playing a really cool blue Lin control deck in set 3 sealed. And I was playing, I don't even remember what I was playing, some kind of less controlling deck. But anyway, so here he's playing red-green or red-blue Genesis, which isn't like Pete's Genesis deck. Despite him and Peter working together, they both played pretty different Genesis decks. His is a very aggressively slanted red-blue deck that has a pretty aggressive 4-drop and a couple or 2 aggressive 4-drops and 2 different versions of War, which are I'm just going to say they're aggressive. They try to hit me. He has 5 mana Flare, which is a 5/5 flyer for 5 that has no abilities, but flight is hard to block. And then he has a 6 mana Flare that is a 6/6 flyer for 6. And when it attacks, it does 2 damage to everything before blocks. So you can't like block it with a 2 health thing that blocks it. And this card is really important because at the end of game 1, I have Victory Peak in play and I have a 4/2 guy with Interception. And Interception lets me block flight. So if he plays the 6 mana Flare and attacks, it'll deal 2 damage to my 4/2 Interception guy, and my guy will die before he can block, and I'll die because I'm below 6. So he does play that, but I actually have a Clash Ground play, Victory Peak, and I talked about its main ability of when something attacks, you can counterattack to prevent the next 3 damage that would be dealt to something. But my contender's at 2, so if I prevent 3 damage to my contender and then take 6, I'm still going to die. But it has a special mode that doesn't get used nearly as often that says counterplay. When a card is played, you can engage it to prevent the next 3 non-clash damage, which is non-combat damage, basically, that would be dealt to whatever. And so when he plays the Flare, I use that to prevent the 3 damage to my 4/2 Interception guy. He attacks me with the Flare. My 4/2 Interception guy can block because it didn't take 2 damage from the thing. So it gets the chump block. And I ultimately end up winning what is... I just realized I was talking about when I fought Mo again in the Swiss. We just have 3 quick games, and I win 2 of them. He wins 1, and yeah, forget that whole story. I'll maybe edit that out. But yeah, all right. So after that, we look at standings are announced. I get first seed because I'm undefeated. Unfortunately, Matt gets 9th. He lost his last round. And even though I beat Mo, Mo's tiebreakers are still better than Matt's. Mo ends up in as 5th seed and Matt ends up 9th. One thing that I'm surprised about is, I'm not surprised that Ian got top 16. Ian was, he had some practice. He had been working on the deck and he just had a pretty good tournament. But Zach also made top 16 despite his really rough start to the tournament where he started either 1-2 or 0-2. I can't remember. And had that really frustrating game 1 where he got a draw in game 1 of round 1 and lost 2 tiebreaker rules then. So huge congratulations, Zach, on top 16 in that. I thought he was having a really rough time, and I was just really proud of him for bringing it back there. All right. So after that, we had a dinner at Flight, which is a, oh gosh, it was like an Italian restaurant that had really, really good appetizers. We ordered a bunch of appetizers and it was so good. After appetizers, we were basically all pretty full, but we wanted to try some of the food. So I talked Matt into splitting an entree with me, and Merrick ended up just ordering a dessert. So we ate those, and after eating the food, I was like, hey, they haven't brought the check out, but I really want to get some sleep before top eight. Can I give someone money or send someone money? And Matt's like, no, I got you. You owe me $0. Get out of here. I'm like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah. He said that I basically built the deck that got him a top 16, but that's mostly Matt being real nice. And I really appreciated that. So we got out of there. I got some sleep. Woke up the next day ready for top eight. And yeah, top eight is open deck lists. So I got to look at my opponent's decks before we played. The first round I played against Chris Brummett. He was on a blue, green, black, white Genesis deck. The white cards were only in the sideboard, so it was blue, green, black in the main deck. And he was splashing a card called Open Fire, I think. Open something. I don't know what it's called. Anyway, it's a two black card that makes your opponent discard a card, and then you can spend resources of any color to play one card from your opponent's discard. So it's a card that's really, really good in control mirrors, because you can basically take late in the game, you make your opponent discard a card, and then you play one of their best cards from their discard, which is huge. And in the first game we play, he doesn't find a black resource. He never plays one of those against me, and I beat him pretty cleanly, I would say. In the second game, I see he has a white resource at one point, and I'm surprised because the discard card, I think, is so good against me. And the white cards instead basically let him get rid of, or if he plays white instead, he can basically get rid of some of the black cards, and instead he has like a combo kill to do a bunch of damage, which is good against me if he has stuff in play and I don't have blockers or I get pretty low. But ultimately, I think it's not helping him win a value game. It's helping him win like a shorter game, which also makes sense because my Genesis deck is like the most controlling of the Genesis that made top eight, which ended up being four Genesis in the top eight. But yeah, so in the second game, I beat him as well. And then we cut to the top four, which is me against Mo. And our first game is so long. It has that big flare interaction that I talked about earlier, that when I talked about it during Swiss. We play the first game and it goes so long. And then the flare interaction saves me. And then I have a really weird point where I can go for a lethal, but if he has a clash buff, the thing that gives your guys +2 defense and draws 2 cards, you can also use its other mode, which gives all your opponents clash cards -2 attack, and they diminish the top 2 cards of the deck. And basically I can choose to go for lethal in a spot where if I do that and he has one of those clash buffs, I'll lose the game on the spot. But if I don't go for lethal and he has one of his 7 drops, then that 7 drop will kill me. And I look through his discard. He's played one of the 7 drops. He's played 2 of the clash buffs. And I'm like, if he doesn't have this clash buff here, I should win the game on the spot. So I risk it and I go for it. And he doesn't have the clash buff and I win what is another crazy game. And I managed to beat Mo 2-0, but those games, 2-0 does not describe how close those games were. It was a really, really close set. Then in the finals, I meet up against Peter Budensek again. And I think Mo actually might have made this comment. It was Peter Mo, one of them, made the comment that our top four was the exact same 4 players as top 4 the Clash Ground that Pete won in Vegas. It was me, it was Mo, it was Pete, and it was Jacob Snodgrass, who was playing that really cool green, blue, black Clarity deck at the Vegas tournament, and was playing the green, white Kagan control deck at this tournament. And Pete beat Jacob in the other side of the bracket. Peter's deck was a Genesis deck that had much more accessory destruction than an average Genesis deck, because green just has access to a lot of accessory destruction that is quite good. It's a 5 mana 5/3 flight that when it enters, it blows up an accessory, and Pete was playing. I think two or three of that in the main deck, and then the fourth up, he could board up to four copies. So a lot of ways to kill Kagan's accessories and really clock him as well. So I played against Pete in the finals. The finals was a great set. You can actually watch the replay of it on, if you look up the Alpha Clash Pro Tour live stream, it's on there. I think that the best part, or the craziest part of the game, was I had stripped his whole hand. I had my accessory in play that stopped his contender ability from working. And I had 13 life and a blocker. And he draws and he slams a Kagan into play, hits me for 5 and destroys my blocker. Or no, he slams the 8-8, the lone fighter, and I block it. And now I'm just down a card. And then the next turn, he slams the 5-5 Kagan into play and does a bunch more damage to me. And I answer his board. And then the last turn, I'm like, there's a few different cards you could draw that kill me here. The biggest one would be Amazon Rainforest, which is a clash ground that just draws a card. But the biggest reason that's a problem is I have a victory peak in play and I'm using that to protect myself, basically. And he draws and I'm like, please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. And he thinks for a while. And the last two turns he drew, when he drew his really powerful card, he just like slammed it into play and hit me with it. This time he stopped and thought for a while. And ended up, I don't remember what card it was, but it wasn't a card that killed me. So I was relieved. I managed to win that game the next turn or two. I kind of locked him out after he missed on that draw. And yeah, that was it for the tournament. I won the first Alpha Clash Pro Tour. They gave me a nice shiny Dragon Helm champion card. Similar vibes to the Flesh and Blood gold foils you get for winning callings and other big events. It says Pro Tour champion on it, kind of like the Pro Tour hero card. So it's really cool. It's going on my trophy case back up there with all the other things I've won from events. And yeah, that was it for the Pro Tour. Afterwards, I get lots of hugs from all the Wolfpack guys, and we have dinner reservations at 7:30, but the tournament actually ends at like 5, so I have time to go call Casey, talk on the phone for a while, call some other loved ones back home, and just have basically celebrate, and then go to dinner, have another celebration. We go to a place called Utah. It's like I think they described it as a fusion of Japanese and Peruvian food. It was very good. There were a lot of really good things on the menu. It was also very expensive. And after we finish eating, Matt and Ian look at each other and they're like, and they look at Zach and they're like, Zach, are you up for covering this? Because me and Ian want to split this with the three of us and kind of congratulate Michael and thank Merrick for driving us around. And so that's really kind of them. They cover the entire bill, which ends up being like $200-something. It was not cheap. We ordered so many apps, so many different foods, and all three of the desserts on their dessert menu. And it was just delicious. And Zach kind of made a comment that last time when I won a big tournament, he bought me food, and this time they were buying me food again. And I'm like, that's fair. I really appreciate it. I don't know what else to say. It was really kind of them, and it was really nice. So afterwards, I'm like, what's next? And they're like, we're going to bed. They had to fly out early in the morning. So we said bye, got hugs, gave cards back. I had borrowed a lot of my cards from Zach, and Zach made a request. He made a request before I left that he wanted me to say something very specific on this podcast. So he asked me to say that he is the wind beneath my wings, the wind carrying my wings, something about the wind that lifts my wings. So Zach, I love you. You're the wind beneath my wings. Thanks for being awesome. And yeah, after that, go back to the hotel, talk to Merrick till like 1 a.m, pass out. And that was my week. It was a great time. And I can't wait for the next Alpha Clash tournament. Now is when Roger usually pops in and says something, but I'm just on my own. So always remember, when you're alone or with your buddy Roger, always remember, mind your